Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, August 28th, 2013, and we're going to be talking about central banks. Of course, we're going to be talking about Syria. We're also going to be talking about health care. We're going to be talking about consumer confidence, a lot of things today. But first, let's get on with the market report. Today, this fine Wednesday, the middle of the week, you have gold still up, still barely up, $1,417, $1,417, up 40 cents. Silver's down 21 at $24.41. Platinum was up $11 at $15.42, along with palladium up to at $749. Gold actually hit a high. It was up strong this morning, $1,432, and but it did come back as you had strength in the U.S. dollar up 0.29 at 81.42. You also had the Dow Jones that was higher today. Crude oil, it was up over 110 today. That fell back a little bit, 0.68 at 109.69. The war drum sort of stopped beating there for a little bit today, so it wasn't so much in your face, Syria, as yesterday. They needed to get the Dow up a little bit, which they accomplished. So you have the stocks ending a little bit higher, with the Dow up 48 points at 14,824. The NASDAQ was up 14 at 3,594. S&P up 5 at 1,634. And the 10-year yield, 2.78%. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. I'm glad to see gold is. It's just encouraging after the earlier this year, see that gold has not only broken through 1,400, but apparently it's going to sit there. It's not going to fall down below. Now we don't know that for an absolute fact, but it's encouraging to see. Another day we keep on. When did we break 1,400? Wasn't it just Monday?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so. Mm-hmm. So this is good. There hasn't been a reaction that took us down below 1,400 for during these 3 days. We don't know what will happen tomorrow or Friday, but if we can get through the week, pretty good evidence that the breakthrough 1,400 is, as permanent as anything is permanent in the markets. Is anything permanent in the markets, Melody? Other than human greed and human stupidity, that's also partly in there. A lot of that in the markets. We got ignorance and we have greed. That's permanent. But other than that, what's permanent in the markets?
Not much.
I didn't think so.
Not much. But certainly the seems like they slacked off a little bit today on the war talk on Syria. Although it's still there, it's just not in your face. You have Obama's big focus today, of course, is on Martin Luther King, and he's to be give some sort of speech this afternoon, and you know, all kinds of things going on for the 50th year anniversary on I Have a Dream.
Yep.
So that is going on as we speak, so you certainly couldn't have all this talk. However, it's interesting, you know, this morning watching CNBC, John McCain was on the financial news program, and you know, they act like this is just going to be a quick wham bam, you know, thank you type of a situation, to where they're going to go in, smack them around a little bit, and it amazes me that that's their thought process. Certainly doing things, there's a lot of ways you could look at this, of what they're doing, why they're doing it, whereas the rest of the politicians, the Republicans, they're awfully quiet of what's going on, and so.
Well, the reason they're doing it, I think, is because the Syrian government has been kicking the rebels' buns in the last month or 6 weeks, and if somebody doesn't do something, if whatever powers support the rebels don't jump in to help the rebels are going to lose this thing in the foreseeable future, and that indicates that our government is actually supporting the rebels.
Right.
That's not a surprise, but it's more evidence. They don't want to see the rebels beat, so they come up with some cock and bull story about poison gas being released in Syria, and I don't doubt that the gas has been released, but it is absolutely unclear as to who released that gas. The government, our government says, it was the Syrian government. The question is, why would the Syrian government do that? They have to know they're walking on eggs relative to international opinion and the United States. Why would they gas a couple hundred of their own people and thereby provide an excuse for our government or the international community to at least be shocked, outraged, and perhaps attack? It makes no sense that the government would have done that. And for what purpose? To kill a couple hundred of their own people, largely civilians? Where does the government profit from this, other than you could say they're trying to scare the rest of the people of Syria into supporting the government? You might be able to make that argument, but as a practical matter, they have far more to lose by gassing their own people than they do by not gassing their own people, by just, you know, treating them halfway fairly. And the implication is, logic suggests that the gas was released by the rebels, or by the whatever forces support the rebels. So, but who knows? No one really knows, and all by itself, the fact that we don't really know, that nullifies any moral or legal foundation for us to act. Somebody's dead, I get that. A couple hundred people are dead, but if we don't know who killed them, who should we attack? If we don't absolutely know it was the government, if we don't absolutely know it wasn't the rebels, if we don't know absolutely who's responsible, we can't just go in there and start killing people on our own, not on any moral basis. It just becomes a pretext. It becomes reminiscent of the same thing we saw with Secretary of State Colin Powell back in 2003 when he addressed the United Nations. And he told them that he had no doubt that Saddam Hussein had biological weapons, and later on they talked about the yellow cake and how they could make nuclear weapons, and they had weapons of mass destruction and so on. And based on Powell's presentation, the United Nations and the United People of the United States were largely moved, significantly moved, to support an invasion of Iraq. And then later on turned out, oops, there were no weapons of mass destruction. We had no reason. We had no lawful foundation or moral foundation to invade Iraq. We had no more reason to invade Iraq than the Nazis had to invade France back during World War II. All right, and we may have had less. The truth is, Nazis, they had some reason to invade France. They lost part of the German Alsace-Lorraine land that was part of Germany, was surrendered to France after World War I. They were still burning about that. Poland, I've heard reports that some of the land that Poland had was part of Germany prior to World War I. And that's the sort of thing that sits back and aggravates people. They want their land back. We can say whether it's right. We can debate whether it's right or wrong for the Germans to invade countries to try to regain whatever land was taken from them, and then even take some more land for themselves. You can debate what's right and wrong. But you can still see they had some kind of an excuse. Might not have been a good excuse. Might not have been a just excuse. But they had an excuse. What's our excuse for bombing Syria? We don't even have one. We have none, other than an allegation that the government is that somebody gassed a couple hundred people in Syria, and as a result, the government needs to be bombed. You can't just bomb people if you don't know who's responsible. It's debatable if you should bomb them, even if you do know who's responsible. But if you don't know, the right thing to do is sit on your buns. Bide your time until you see clear evidence. We don't see that yet. So what are we going to do in Syria? Don't know. If they are backing off, cooling their heels today, it may be that enough public sentiment against bombing Syria has manifested. Maybe the government's going to pull in its horns. Maybe enough people have stood up and written to Obama and their congressmen and their senators and said, look, we don't want another war in the Middle East. We can't go in there and bomb everybody who looks at us funny. And from my perspective, one of the most difficult things about Syria is who are the good guys over there? I'm not going to argue that Assad, the president of Syria, and his regime are necessarily good guys. I'm not going to make that argument, and I'm certainly not going to argue that the rebels are good guys. There are pictures of one of those guys eating human flesh, right? Engaging in cannibalism after they'd killed somebody. Then he proceeded to eat part of the guy's heart and his liver. Some commander over there. If you can't identify the good guys, who are you going to fight to assist? The lesser of two evils? Huh? The least of two bad guys? You know, from my perspective, if it's true that they are mostly bad guys over there, why not just leave them alone? If they want to kill each other, let them kill each other. But why should we be involved? I don't understand what our interest is in Syria. I'm sure people can say, well, it's very important for this reason, that reason. I think it's a bunch of crap. I doubt that it has a significant role to play in my life. In your life, in the lives of anyone listening to this program. What's Syria got to do with you folks? What's it got to do with me? Why are we there? So peace. The whole thing becomes just nuts.
Peace, Al. Peace.
Yeah. Peace, peace.
Peace.
Exactly. And my answer to that, there's verses in the Bible, and the people say, peace, peace, but there is no peace. Yeah. Talking about end times, and I don't doubt. You know, that's exactly just so perfect for what's going on in the Middle East. There isn't going to be any peace over there. Not anytime soon. No, not anything. There won't be any real peace. I doubt that I'll see it in my lifetime unless the good Lord comes back and straightens everything out. But other than that, there isn't going to be peace over there.
And then when you have other factions that are stirring it up to promote their agendas.
Who really benefits from the poison gas? It helps the rebels because the United States might side against with the rebels and against the Syrian government and bomb some of the Syrian government facilities and give the rebels another bite at the apple.
Get them some more weapons. Get them some more weapons.
Yeah. I know. It may be the military-industrial complex. There's people that manufacture those weapons, and it's conceivable that they go over and pull some of these stunts just to fan the flames to sell more drones or bombs or whatever. These people manufacturing weapons don't get paid unless somebody shoots somebody. Somebody's got to pull the trigger. You don't pull the trigger, they don't make any money. So what do? Maybe you go out and foment a little war, or perhaps throw fuel on whatever fire is already out there. Got a little fire going, throw a gallon of gasoline on it. Make it a little bigger. Sell a few more bullets, bombs, and missiles, airplanes, whatever. The world is mad, it's crazy, it's insane, and it is frustrating to be able to see some of this insanity and yet find it so difficult to communicate the awareness to people and also inspire them to actually do something about it. The world is being run by a bunch of psychopaths right now. Crazy people have taken control of the governments, around the world, to a significant degree. And is anyone doing anything to stop it? To just say, get rid of these bums. Or a bunch of murderers. Get rid of them. And they just hang on. They look at us. They lie to us. And they just keep on grinning and lying, and people die. The world has become mad.
Mary writes in, it's ironic that one of the biggest warmonger presidents in our history is paying tribute to an anti-war activist who warned us about just such a government.
Yeah, the anti-war activist he's talking about would be Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a man in the White House who won the Nobel Peace Prize. He's been involved in the war in Afghanistan, war in Iraq, an invasion of Libya. Right now we're working on an invasion of Syria. The man has his own private death list of people he wants killed with drones around the world, and he won the Nobel Peace Prize. I wonder what the Swedes are smoking. Was it Sweden? Yeah, Sweden, I think, Nobel. Isn't it? Nobel Prize comes out of Sweden.
So. Mm-hmm.
It's not Norwegian. I believe it's Swedish. What are they smoking up there? This is just stupid. And it's another one of those things where you look back and you see apparently the New World Order has even gained control of whoever issues the Nobel Peace Prize. And they use it. It becomes an artificial award. It becomes a pretext, a lie, a fiction. But it has no bearing on reality. What did they give? Why did President Obama get the Nobel Peace Prize? And the answer is because he's black, or at least partly black. And that was the answer. He has nothing to do with peace. And he shows no sign of investing. He feels more comfortable with murder than he does with peace. I mean, if the guy really deserved the Peace Prize, you would think that he would. How can a man who has a Peace Prize also have his own death list? It's insane.
Murray also writes, it was the U.S. that provided chemical weapons to Iraq in their war with Iran in the 80s. And it was the U.S. who used depleted uranium and white phosphorus in their war with Iraq in 2004.
Yeah, it wasn't a moral outrage then, though, was it? It's a moral outrage to use those weapons against civilians. It's not a moral outrage for us to use them in the midst of war. And you know who mostly gets killed in wars? Melody, there have been some studies, and I don't have them right here in front of me, so I can't quote the numbers exactly. But in the 20th century, I'm only spitballing here because I don't remember the numbers exactly, but I believe it ran something like 4 civilians killed for every military, and it might be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Modern
mm-hmm.
warfare is not directed against soldiers. In the end, it's directed against civilians. That's how it works out. That's how it really works out, who are typically unarmed, unorganized, don't understand what's going on, living in a state of terror, and they're the ones that are going to be bombed, gassed, or otherwise maimed, killed. Right? They're the ones that are going to pay the price. And a good example is Iraq. I believe it was about 4,000 Americans died over there. At the same time, the estimates vary between 100,000 and 1 million Iraqis who died in the last 8.5 years when we were in Iraq. That's a minimum of 25 to 1. 25 Iraqis died for every one American, and most of them were civilians.
Go back to the Civil War, and you can see they had their battles in fields.
Yeah.
Population, women, children. Once in a while, one would get accidentally killed, but they were not in the line of fire. They were not in the line of... They were protected. The women and children were protected, and the men fought.
They had similar battles in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come out from the surrounding communities, and they'd sit around the field and watch the battle as if they were watching a football game. Right? They weren't in danger. The danger was only among the actual participants in the war, the soldiers of the two sides. We're breaking into our commercial time right now, Melody. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. And Melody has her special du jour coming up right now. What's the special, Melody?
Today we're carrying the same special. It was very popular. You guys know a good deal when you hear one. Mint State 63, $20 gold piece, St. Gaudens, minted prior to 1933, certified by NGC, PCGS, and $50 face value of 90% silver. That would be 200 quarters that you would receive. It's a great little package. Give us a call at 800-375-4188, $2,700. In fact, the $20 Saints were actually up $10 today. They were up $10 today. And I also had some folks who wanted to take advantage just of the gold coin. So we broke out the silver. And I also had folks who wanted to take advantage of the silver. So we broke that out. And I had some folks who wanted to take advantage of both pieces of the special. So you have to give us a call. We'll work with you. We got some great prices on all our products, great shipping, and quality, folks. It makes a difference when it comes to product that you purchase. Quality, quality, quality. You know, and I've seen product where folks have bought elsewhere, and sometimes I've seen coins come in, your bullion coins that are all scratched and dented and all sorts of things. So just be very careful in what you purchase, and you don't have to worry about it if you purchase from Discount Gold and Silver Trading. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com. DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can also listen to our radio programs. We've had a little bit of difficulty. It started about a month ago. Our daily programs are, for some reason, sometimes they load and sometimes they don't. I appreciate all the calls and letting us know that they're not there. Otherwise, we couldn't fix the problem. So the problem should be fixed. And but you can also go back into the previous weeks and months archives.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Syria. Just a little bit more, not a whole lot, but a little bit more. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the Constitution of the United States declares, Congress shall have the power to declare war. Now, in fact, Congress hasn't declared a war, to my knowledge, since World War II. Vietnam was not a declared war. Right? So far as I know, Iraq and Afghanistan were not declared wars. Various invasions here, there, and wherever around the world are not declared wars. There might be a couple in there, but I don't think so. So far as I know, we haven't had a declared war since World War II. And I stand to be corrected. So my question is this. If Congress doesn't expressly declare a war, which the Constitution says Congress shall have the power, and when it says Congress shall have the power to declare war, it means only Congress shall have the power to declare war. I can't declare war. Melody can't declare war. The president can't declare war all by himself. The federal courts can't declare war. The only entity that can declare war is the Congress. So I'm wondering. If Congress doesn't expressly declare a war, but the United States government nevertheless attacks Syria, would that attack still constitute an act of war, or would it actually be an act of terrorism? Are all undeclared wars acts of terrorism? Now, the answer would be if you're defending yourself against an attack, then you may not have declared a war, but you're in it because someone else attacked you. If it's purely a defensive action, all right, I go along with that. You know, we can go without an act of war. We have to. The war is there. It's like someone breaks into your house. We don't have time to have a debate over whether this guy has an entitlement or you're entitled or whatever. This is a shoot first and ask questions later situation. When you see that stranger in the house, there's a problem. The same thing if you're attacked, if you're living in a country, you're attacked, you got to fight back. But what happens if you are the aggressor? What happens if you are invading? If there is no act of war, is your invasion unlawful? certainly it would appear to be unconstitutional, and as such, can it be construed as an act of terrorism? Now, I know a lot of people aren't comfortable with the idea of suggesting that the government of the United States might engage in terrorist activities, and I'm sure people in the government itself say, oh, my gosh, you can't say that. They're the government. We're the good guys. Well, yep. I don't know.
A comment came in that says international law says if an action has the characteristics of a war, it is a war.
Well, it may be. And how long has international law embraced that idea? Is that something that goes back into the 1800s, the 1700s, and so on? Is it something we can find in Vattel? Vattel wrote a book on international law, and did they recognize it? Or is that a relatively recent addition to international law? And I'm curious, and I'm sure you don't have the answer from whoever sent that, but it's an intriguing idea to me, because if I found out that that was an addition to international law that had been added in the last 10 years, even 20, yeah, I'd sit back and say, I would suspect that this is evidence they've modified the law in order to make these sorts of things seemingly legal, even though they know very well that they're not. On the other hand, if it's been there for a long time, And even if that were true in international law, if it's true in international law, even it's been true for a couple of centuries, that those events that look like, if it looks like a war and walks like a war and talks like a war, then it's a war. That might be international law, but what about American law in the sense that our Constitution says Congress shall have the power to declare war? If Congress doesn't declare war, it may be that what we're doing is okay at international law, but is it okay within the context of the Constitution? And which is more important, international law or the Constitution? Which law should our government be obeying? What do you think, Melody?
Well, I think, we have various treaties and so forth that have been created. Maybe they are violating both. There's often comment of what they would do is more of an act of treason.
It's one of those things that we don't know what the answer is.
No.
And perhaps we can't even, and the answer is perhaps debatable, but the questions are legitimate. And when it comes to asking about war, where people die and are maimed and are killed, and it doesn't just include the soldiers, it includes primarily civilians, then these are questions that should be asked and they should be answered, and someone should proceed in a way that is absolutely lawful when you're going to start engaging in activity that's going to kill people. You know it's going to kill people. You know there's going to be what they call collateral damage. You know innocent people are going to be killed. Isn't it reasonable that you would have the Congress at least declare a war before we start killing innocent people? Because inevitably it's going to happen. Doesn't the world deserve that much? Don't we deserve that much? You know, and it's not just a question of protecting people overseas. That's not what I'm talking about, really. When we act without having, when we start bombing other countries, without having declared a war, without having an adequate pretext, for example, we went to war in Iraq over weapons of mass destruction that did not even exist. And now we're preparing to perhaps engage in warlike activities, bombing people in Syria, based on allegations, somebody released some gas over there, but who? We don't even know for sure who's responsible for the gas and a couple hundred people who died. Aren't these the kinds of issues that should be debated and discussed in Congress? And shouldn't the Congress have an opportunity to vote on this, not simply to protect foreign people from an imprudent war conducted by our own government, but also to protect you and me in our belief that this is a good country, that we're the good guys? We can't continue to invade any place we want to invade just because it might be fun, because it might be beneficial to supporting the dollar. We can't do it and continue to regard ourselves as the best country on the face of the earth. We are losing a certain amount of the moral confidence we've had in this country. And we're losing it because our government is behaving like a pack of gangsters, at least in some circumstances. So there's more at stake than even bombing, even lives. And there's things that are at stake for this country in the way we think about ourselves. And if we want to continue to believe we're the good guys, we have to do things in a good way. Even if that way is sometimes, it sometimes inhibits us, it slows us down. But imagine, let's just imagine for the sake of argument, that before we invaded Iraq, Congress had debated whether we should or should not invade. And they came to a conclusion. They either did or they did not declare war. There's a good chance that Congress would not have declared war. And that means we would not have wasted 8.5 years of money and military and lives and so on. For what? For weapons of mass destruction that didn't even exist? There's something to be said for this. People say that we can't afford, we don't have time. Things are moving too fast. We don't have time to set the Congress down and let them vote yes, no, or maybe on whether we should not debate, or whether we should or should not invade, whether we should or should not attack. We have to respond now, right now. That's the argument. And I can understand that in the context of a nuclear war, for example, and someone has attacked us. But in the context of where we are preparing to attack someone else, I think it's incumbent on all of us to make sure that there is a debate, a declaration of war, or not a declaration of war. And if there's no declaration of war, fine. We're not going to invade. That's all. Wouldn't it have been better if we'd done that in the context of Iraq? And wouldn't it be better even now if we'd done that in the context of Syria? It's arguable that it would have been better even in the context of Vietnam, which was another. What did we get out of Vietnam except a black wall in Washington with over 50,000 names carved on it? What did we get for Vietnam? Does anyone know? What was that about? What did we win? We won nothing. And we might have been well served if the Congress had not abandoned its duty to debate whether we should or should not declare war on Vietnam and Iraq and perhaps now Syria. We might have been very well served. We might be more prosperous. We might be less in debt. A significant number of Americans who died in these conflicts would still be alive. A significant number of Americans who were maimed in these contexts, in the context of these wars, would be healthy today and intact. You know, there's something to be said. This isn't just a game. There's a certain amount of sense and common sense and even necessity to following the principles we find in the Constitution. And government is arguing, no, it's an emergency. We don't have time for that. We got to act now. We got to attack now. Yeah, well, how's it working out for us? We move into these idiotic wars, and then once we get in there, government understands that once we get in there, then they're going to argue, well, we've got to get behind the troops. Got to support the soldiers. It doesn't matter if we're there for no compelling reason, for no rational reason. It doesn't matter if there are no weapons of mass destruction. Once we put American soldiers on the ground in Iraq, well, then we have to get behind them. We have to support them. Even though what they're doing is irrational, without reason, and wrong. But government understands, once they get those troops in there, most Americans are going to continue to support the troops no matter what. And it's an idea that we have to reconsider. We can't just support the troops just because there are troops. Somewhere along the line, there has to be a question of right and wrong. Not just our side, hooray for our side. It's got to be, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville, I talked about this yesterday when we had Pastor Fisher on the program. Alexis de Tocqueville, French writer, historian, philosopher. He said back in the about 1840, 1850, he says, America is great because America is good. But if America ever ceases to be good, it will cease to be great. And I think he's exactly right. And when we start pushing ourselves into these idiotic wars without first having a declaration of war by the Congress, if there's going to be a war, let Congress declare it. And if they don't want to declare it, then we aren't going to have a war. And under those circumstances, we may have some difficulty, but we can still sustain the idea that America is good. And as long as we can sustain the idea that America is good, America can be great. But insofar as we engage in wars for weapons of mass destruction where there are none, and we initiate the war, we cannot claim to be good. And if de Tocqueville was correct, it means we can't continue to claim to be great. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Take a break for a couple more commercial announcements. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addis on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody, what's next?
If Earl is still there, we have a caller, Earl, from Oregon.
Earl, are you still there?
Yeah, nope. There's Earl in Oregon. Hey, about where Congress... Will the presidents get the power to declare war, which they don't have, only Congress does? And there's a few different things going on here. Number one is Congress has abdicated their power to declare war, and they were given the cover for doing that by the Supreme Court a few years ago, which said if Congress is approving the money for the war, then Congress has approved the war. But it's not the same as the declaration of war, because the declaration of war is like a cease and desist letter that says you are doing wrong, and here's a list of the reasons of things that you're doing wrong, and if you don't stop, this is what we're going to do. And that's the purpose of a declaration of war, is to give the other side a chance to change their behavior, because maybe that's all they need. It's like when Jonah went to Nineveh and said, these are the list of things that you're doing that's wrong. God says this, stop it. And the people said, you're right, and they stopped. So a declaration of war is important in law, in American law, and for what's right and wrong. And
what do you think about the Earl, what do you think about the Supreme Court, if I understand correctly? Now, I haven't read this before myself. You're telling me this for the first time I've heard it. But if I understood you correctly, you're saying that the Supreme Court has declared that by virtue of funding the war, Congress has agreed that it's declared a war. Now, do you think that's reasonable? Do you think it's a pretext? Pardon me?
That Congress has approved the war. It's not a declaration of war, because a declaration of war is a notice to the
other
side.
Okay, I get
you.
All right, I see what you're saying right now.
Okay?
I see what you're saying.
So, and the other part of this,
the Constitution, but here's the point, though. Nevertheless, I think up until recent times, it has been presumed that there isn't going to be a war unless Congress declares a war. It was that, I think that was true at least up until World War II. Prior to World War II, was there ever a war we engaged in that was undeclared?
Not that I know of.
No, not that I know of either. We both stand to be corrected on this, but I don't think so. Up until World War II, last time we had a declared war, to my knowledge, it was presumed, understood, that only Congress could declare war. And if they didn't declare war, regardless of funding or anything else, if they didn't declare war, there wasn't going to be a war. And yet the Supreme Court apparently moved to say, no, we can do
this. The pattern for the legislators to abdicate their responsibility and abdicate their powers comes from what happened in Rome when the Senate abdicated their powers and gave them to Caesar, and Caesar became a tyrant, in effect. And our U.S. Congress is acting in the same way as the Roman government, a foreign government, did. And folks, there's one really big important issue that you need to know of why it's important for America to not get involved in a civil war, and that's this. If when we had our civil war here in America, if a foreign nation sent soldiers bearing machine guns into our civil war, how would Americans, either side, have taken that? They would have said, no, that's wrong. This is our problem. We will settle it. We don't need foreigners bearing machine guns to come into our country. If we allow our government to go into a foreign country and sending foreign soldiers bearing machine guns into a civil war, what's to prevent some other nation to say, you know what, over in America you're having problems. We're going to send our foreign soldiers bearing machine guns into America.
I agree. I agree with you 100%, but we live in a world that they're trying to move in the direction of global government. They're trying to move the world to a situation where we no longer recognize borders between countries, and we don't have sovereign nations anymore. What we have are just administrative districts. And under those terms, we can take soldiers from anybody, any place, and move them anywhere else. If there are no national borders, there are no nations, what's your objection? What's your objection to having troops from China come down here if there is no longer a legitimate and distinct United States of America that's separated from all the other nations?
Especially if the American government sent their foreign soldiers bearing machine guns into some other country's civil war. What's to prevent England or France or Germany or Russia or China, the communists, to come into America sending their
And what is going to prevent that? And what is going to what is going to prevent that, Earl?
The American people themselves. And guess
How?
What? Unfortunately, the federal government will side with the communist government.
They can try. They can try. But I saw a report back, and you've probably seen this too. If you calculate the number of people who merely signed up to go deer hunting in Minnesota, maybe it was Michigan or Minnesota a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever. The number of licensed deer hunters exceeded, it was more than any army on the face of the earth. There's a lot of people with guns in this country, and if they want to bring people in from foreign countries, there's a bunch of them that are going to go home in body bags, if they get home at all. As long as the American people are armed, foreign countries should be extremely reluctant to come over here. Bring your AK-47. We can use more, and we'll get it from you. So it's up to the American people, push comes to shove, to protect us.
There's lessons there for us all. Thank you.
See you again, Earl. Earl?
I think he's gone.
Okay, Earl's gone.
Appreciate it, Earl.
All right, Earl, thank you.
We got some information here. It says the War Powers Resolution of 1973 is a federal law intended to check the president's power to commit the United States to an armed conflict, U.S. law, without the consent of Congress. The resolution was adopted in the form of a U.S. Congress joint resolution. This provides that the president can send U.S. armed forces into action abroad only by authorization of Congress, or in case of a national emergency created by attack upon the U.S., its territories or possessions, or its armed forces.
What's the date on that law? Did you say 1973?
1973.
Okay. It's probably a reaction to the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And trying to prevent the whatever, you know, if we elect another idiot who wants to get us, drag us into some idiotic war, trying to withhold that power from the presidency. But last time I heard, and I haven't studied this and I don't recall clearly, last time I heard is the president can commit soldiers to war to for up to 90 days. All right. And then after that, they need Congress to declare. Well, you know, once you get them in for 90 days, it's like getting the nose of the camel under your tent. Guess what? You're going to have, when you're there for 90 days, we'll be there for 100.
Well, we already know, Al. They don't read the Patriot Act. They don't read Obamacare. So they don't read anything. So I guess they feel they can just, you know, worry about the details later.
They live in a world where they were the
react and worry about it later.
Government believes that might makes right. And as long as they have power to do something, why not do it? And it's a complete, that mentality is a complete violation of the fundamental principle of the Constitution, which was we gave limited powers to government, which we denominated in the Article 1 of the Constitution. It said you can do this, and you can do this, and you can do this. And in fact, if I recall correctly, there are something like 17 fundamental powers that were granted to the federal government. But no more. And beyond that, whenever they step outside the limits of those 17 powers, the government is acting unconstitutionally. And government doesn't want to recognize any limits. Government wants to be free to do anything it wants to, anytime it wants to. If it feels good, do it. If the government has the power to do it, why not? Might makes right. That's been their position. And it is a dangerous position. It's contrary to the best interest of the American people, contrary to the best interest of this nation. And I would hope that sooner or later enough people will get involved in the politics of this country and stand up and say, no, listen, you guys only have limited powers. That's the deal. We the people are the sovereigns. We're the people in order to form a more perfect union. We are the ones who created this government. And the deal is we, the sovereigns, are going to give you, the people working in government, a certain amount of powers to work as our servants. And you can do this, 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 and this. But no more. This is all you can do.
Well,
we're not surrendering all sovereignty to the government. We gave them some powers, and we even divided them, so no, to further inhibit them from taking over. And yet, you know, the struggle, the inevitable struggle, the essential struggle that's gone on since time began between people who would be free and people who would control. And it goes on, and it's been going on, and we see it in the struggle between God and Satan. Satan was a rebel. Didn't want anything to do. He was tired of taking orders from God. He'd do things to him. Kids are the same way. Kids, you can't tell me what to do. Yeah, we can. And what happens is the kids start out demanding freedom for themselves, but later as they become adults, they also demand the right and the power to control others around them, a spouse, their own children, employees, whatever. We all have mixed opinions. We want to be free, but we also want to control others, typically. And there's a contradiction in that that inevitably leads us into trouble. You know, how can we be free and control others? It's part of human nature to want to do both. And the Constitution says, okay, you can control others to a limited degree. And they're telling the people, other than that, you people are free to do what you want to do. And over time, government says, oh, no, that's silly. We should be able to control people right down to whether or not kids can run lemonade stands. Many of you have seen that in the newspaper. Government comes after children because they're selling lemonade out on the sidewalk. It's just stupid.
There's a lot of stupid things out there. And certainly, I think with the situation is certainly right up there. And we talked about getting involved, why we shouldn't get involved, why we don't have the rights and the right and the approval and what it's based on as far as treason and the criminality of it and the loss of lives that will happen if this continues. But let's take it one step further. We're out of time, but the next step is what happens afterwards.
What happens after what?
If they decide
to bomb Syria?
Yeah. It comes when you have China and Russia and so many of the...
Oh, yeah.
And you China doesn't even have to do anything. All they have to do is start selling some U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
And that'll have a big impact.
That's true.
The Saudis, Saudi Arabia, all they got to do is start selling oil in euros or other currencies.
Yeah.
Forget the U.S. dollar. So, folks, the picture is big here, and it's a frightening situation. We can talk all that we shouldn't because of this, and that, but when we get beyond if they did it or not come Monday, as you mentioned yesterday, Al, or the day before, nasty things are going to happen.
I understand. Well, you know, it's reminiscent of what started World War II. I believe it was World War II. Ultimately, maybe it was World War I. Probably World War I. What started it, somebody assassinated the Archduke Archduke Ferdinand of what is today Yugoslavia, or what became Yugoslavia. I can't even remember what country. But one little thing got the ball bouncing, and it seemed like a triviality. And before you know it, you had a world war. These people are fooling around with little things right now. And if they're not extraordinarily careful or just lucky, we can fool around with some of these things. And next thing you know, cities can cease to exist. Worse comes to worse, this can be a big deal. Now, I don't expect that, but it's the kind of thing that's possible.
I wouldn't expect it unless they back down. If they go ahead with it, I expect big things to happen.
Well, it'll lay the foundation for big things sooner or later.
Big things
I agree
with
that. There'll be
sooner.
A reaction even if it takes 2 years.
Oh, it'll be a lot sooner
right,
than that.
We're going to settle this account.
It'll be a lot
we have to settle our
that.
Own accounts, Melody, because we're out of time.
Okay.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, meet Melody and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.